use it on the basis of his thoughts, and this metaverse can change the thoughts
of the users as a whole. Like most of the people nowadays do not care about many things. They all are going for a more free world. They want to be free. They want to experience everything. That makes it very terrifying.
Yeah, but surely if a Muslim was to enter the metaverse, they would still have a code of guiding principles for them while they're interacting in that world.
Yes, but the appeals are too much.
What do you mean?
I mean, there are so many things that might enchant you. You would be so... You're going to be attracted by many things. Maybe that would take a lot of your time, so you won't have much of time to think.
I think she means to say you need to work more on your nafs then, because you're already controlling it in this world.
Yes, really. How do you control it?
When you have more options, you have more like resources, then it becomes more freedom. It becomes really hard to control your nafs.
Less scary, because in the dunya, let's face it, there's fears which control you. You know, the police might get involved, or you know, parents might find out, or this or that. But in the metaverse, you're free. You can do whatever
you like. Yes, exactly. That's what I'm saying. There's no one to control you. You're alone and you can do everything you want.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Sister Zaina, what's the first thing you would do if you went into the metaverse?
I'll go for ziyarat.
What about you, Sister Asma?
Well, ziyarat, of course, is a good case, but I will travel the world, maybe. Go to some museums, libraries.
Wow. And you can actually read the books?
Yes, read the books.
Blimey heck.
And if I'm here, I'll definitely see my mom.
Wow.
Or far away.
Yes, exactly, for those who are far away.
Okay, so are we saying that it's generally positive?
Yes, generally it might be okay to say it's positive.
Well, it's kind of catch of democracy, isn't it? Because if you have a free platform where you're free to do anything, and you ask Muslims what would you want to do, one Muslim says they want to go to ziyarah, the other one says they want to go and read books, but... Yes. No, if I'm talking from the perspective of some random people out there, you know, I don't want to do all sorts of mischief. This is a world where, you know, I have no responsibilities, there's nothing holding me back. I'd probably want to go and, I don't know, kill some people maybe, you know, and see what it feels like, you know.
That's very dangerous. Yes, that's another part of the story.
But, I mean, it's not that dangerous, is it?
What if people want to be vampires?
Yeah. I mean, that would be fun. Let's go on a killing spree. Nobody's really going to get hurt.
Yes, that would be a bloodshed.
I'm talking from the perspective of a guy, okay? And we love to play internet games, go online, play Call of Duty so we can shoot up our friends and stuff. And at the end of the day, it's all good fun. Nobody's going to really get hurt.
Yes, exactly.
You know, if we're talking about... No children being brought into the world, and that's a bad thing. At the same time, nobody's really going to die.
Yes.
And there's other things that we could experience, which in the real world you wouldn't really do. Like, I would steal. You know, I'd sneak into people's houses and steal their things.
Yes, okay. And a lot more of creative ideas.
Yeah. I mean,
who knows? We should
However, whatever you do is going to have a great impact on your psyche. It's going to have a great impact on your mental health.
Yes.
You feel, I don't know, if you all the time are going to shoot people, kill people, be vampire, and all whatever you have been talking about, I think then you're going to, you know, that will somehow affect
your
real life.
Then there will be a breakdown.
Well, if you look at the case studies to do with shooters in American schools, you know, the school shooters, they found that a lot of them were playing violent video games. And basically, it got to a point where they were so addicted, but the game wasn't fun enough anymore. They needed a taste of reality. And that's when they went to school and they just shot everybody
up. That's what I said.
But this is a very, very small, confined group. All right, this is a very small group. And the same games which are played in America are played in Canada, are played in Germany, in France, in the UK. But you don't see that kind of school shootings, at least to that level, taking place. And so what they found is there is something in the psyche of certain nations, certain upbringings, which bring about that kind of
imperialism.
I mean you could put it down to imperialism, which does have an effect on the psyche of people. But there was a really, when I was studying media studies, there was a really interesting case. Would you ever think of Star Wars as something violent? You'll see that, it's about a futuristic kind of sci-fi movie where people play with, well, they fight with lightsabers, which are these swords, which are made
out
of...
That level of fiction is laser. Too much.
Yeah, okay, but my point was that nobody would think that that is violent. And yet there was a serial killer in America who, before he killed anybody, he would watch his favorite scene from Star Wars. You know, so it's very specific... psychopath type of individuals who get affected by that.
Yes.
And if we take that to the metaverse, look, this kind of violence is always going to take place. Theft is always going to take place.
Yes.
You know, other crimes are also always going to take place. You can't really control it, so why not have fun?
Exactly. And it's free. I told you, you can do everything. The decision is by yours. You decide what to do.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Okay, so there's another plus point to the metaverse. There's lots of people who would never be able to experience real things, you know, like the poor people of the world, the oppressed people of the world. You know, they're not going to be able to experience living in a mansion or, you know, going to a fancy restaurant. Maybe through the metaverse they'll be able to experience those things.
Yes, but maybe, just like today. See, we have a lot of facilities right now, but not all people have the opportunity to use them. Because also in that metaverse, there must be a currency. There must be something to buy things for your own, to sell things. Therefore, you need coins. You have to have coins in order to experience all those things that are prepared for you.
And rich people who are rich in the real world.
Again, they're rich. Money talks everywhere.
Wow. Okay. Well, what about oppressed people? You know, they want to experience some sort of revenge.
Well, the oppressed people,
you know,
I think...
mother-in-laws, you know, like they want to go and... They can't do it in real life. They can't kill their mother-in-laws. They'll go to jail.
Yes.
And probably hell.
Well, I think the world doesn't work for the favor of the poor and the oppressed people. That's been a thing since the beginning of the world.
I don't think that oppressed people will be having that opportunity to go into the metaverse, because as the sister mentioned, you need more coins, you need more money to stay more into that world. And we see only poor people, or the majority of the poor people are being oppressed. It's not rich who are being oppressed.
Yes, and they have some more problems to deal with. I don't think they would even think about it.
Yeah, I mean, a child who doesn't have clean water to drink.
We still see so many oppressed people around the world who really don't have access to clean water, to clean food.
They would be more oppressed.
Hygiene, they would be like more oppressed. I don't think they'll be having any access to metaverse.
What about people who are so oppressed that... Okay, so we've been talking about Mark Zuckerberg and the creation of the metaverse, which is a virtual reality that people can actually plug themselves into. It's not just about the visual anymore. It's about feeling that world, tasting that world. So we've been discussing about the pros and cons and the possible implications that it has on us as Muslims engaging with the metaverse. And we've been discussing it with Sister Asma and Sister Zainab. Thank you both for being here today and discussing this important topic with me. From myself and from the sisters, we bid you Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رازقة
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رازقة لتصي دليلتك once again.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Ruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The right to assemble, to demonstrate, to be heard, a cornerstone of democracy, potentially under threat in proposed UK government legislation that gives the police sweeping new powers.
It does actually, in their opinion, violate civil liberties, existing civil liberties of society. And of course, with the backdrop of COVID and the draconian measures, and on the back of 20 years of increased police powers after the anti-terrorism laws, etc., that have come in to counter terrorism, there's a sort of nervousness.
And here is why it matters. Women being manhandled and handcuffed by police for attending a peaceful vigil held last year in the wake of 33-year-old Sarah Everard's murder at the hands of a police officer.
While the Conservative government claims the bill is aimed at proactively preventing chaos and disruption caused, for example, by people who glue their faces to motorways, its critics say the bill is not about law and order, but about taking away their right to protest.
The proposed legislation was quickly pushed through the House of Commons last year. This week it was put up for debate at the upper chamber of the UK Parliament amid cries of kill the bill from drum-beating protesters, forming an emotive backdrop to it outside the legislative body. What ensued was several amendments made to the proposed legislation to the chagrin of the government.
There is a general trend for government to grab more and more power and to reduce civil liberties. This is what's worrying. I think that the Lords ultimately, as you say, won't be able to stop it entirely. They can slow the process down, water it down slightly. But if governments are inexorably marching towards a greater totalitarian orientated set of legislature, then I'm afraid that at the moment, with the climate the way it is, politically, economically, etc., I don't think it'll be terribly difficult for them to push it through.
Campaigners say the parliamentary defeat came because people took to the streets and raised the alarm about the government's growing authoritarianism. They say it is now time to build the movement and kill the contentious bill once and for all. Saeed Poreza, London.
Islamic and National Forces in the Gaza Strip held a demonstration in front of the Red Cross headquarters in solidarity with Palestinian prisoners held under administrative detention in Israeli jails. The protest comes as hundreds of inmates have already boycotted Israel's military court, demanding an end to its illegal administrative detention. About 500 administrative detainees began the new year by refusing to show up for their court sessions.
Israeli regime has renewed administrative detention against hundreds of Palestinian inmates. Palestinians and human rights groups should do their best to put an end to the cruel policy. We stand by our brothers in Israeli jails who have boycotted Israel's military court. We also call on international human rights organizations to take a serious action.
The boycott of Israel's military court by Palestinian inmates comes as the health of the Palestinian hunger striker Nasser Abu Hamed is deteriorating. He has been in a coma for 11 days while in custody. Palestinian factions say the intentional medical negligence practiced by Israeli regime aims at killing the Palestinian prisoners.
Our message is clear. We will always support our detainees who stand against the brutal policies of the Israeli regime. Our brother Nasser Abu Hamed is in coma for 11 days due to medical negligence as Israel refuses to release him to provide him with proper medication. This amounts to a criminal act against our prisoners.
Public protests are mounting day by day against Israel's decision not to release Nasser Abu Hamed. Palestinians say they will hold Israel accountable if the inmate dies. About 500 Palestinian detainees are refusing to show up for their court sessions, saying that this move is aimed at putting an end to the illegal Israeli administrative detention policy. They are also demanding the release of the hunger-striking prisoner, Nasser Abu Hamid, who's on the verge of death. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
Strikes, protests, and parliamentary disunity have shown that opposition to President Emmanuel Macron's pandemic policies have reached unprecedented levels. Macron dominates his party, and his party dominates Parliament. But France's controversial new vaccine smart pass was only just approved after more than 2 weeks of parliamentary chaos. It's one of the strictest vaccine passes in the world because it requires full vaccination. The vaccine hesitant can no longer provide proof of a negative COVID test to avoid almost total public isolation. There have been weeks of protests in favor of the rights of the non-vaccinated, and unions are planning enormous walkouts against a pandemic response which is accused of being imposed from above and without enough grassroots input.
In the end, it was Macron who decided alone, and that's why it's a bit confused for everyone. So, and that's why it makes a lot of confusion in the population, because just one guy who decided everything and a scientific committee who is more a justification for the decision that has been taken.
Vaccines in France are popular. 80% of the formerly vaccine-skeptical nation is now fully vaccinated. That has many saying that seemingly scapegoating the unvaccinated is a way for Macron to solidify a precarious re-election bid.
Despite his immensely controversial tenure, Macron retains a hardcore base of support of around 20%. It's been long assumed that it will be enough to get him into the second round, where he will defeat a challenger from the far right, like in 2017.
The decision is are very influenced by the fact that the election are coming in April. So it's really difficult to go to the mandatory vaccination for Emmanuel Macron. Maybe he want to wait for his re-election to go from the vaccinal pass to the mandatory vaccination.
The vaccine pass will likely be contested in France's top court, but it is expected to go into effect this week. The Omicron variant is far less deadly than previous versions, giving hope that the pandemic is ending. But it appears that the nation's pandemic policies will be a major part of the presidential election this April. Rami Mazahiri, Paris.
Genocide, the deliberate destruction of an ethnic, national, racial, or religious group. There have been many, with death tolls in the millions, and the threat of another is always around the corner. Organizations like the IHRC are fighting to prevent that by raising awareness. The theme of this year's event, how do states sanitize genocide?
Genocide is sanitized. It's not only the genocidal state which actively attempts to sanitize its crimes. Other states are also actively involved. Those which supply the weapons and other instruments of annihilation. Those which refuse to acknowledge or call out the genocide for fear of the obligations to prevent and punish the crimes taking place that they would be placed under. Those which fear offending trading partners.
There are more than 1,500 monuments across London, commemorating everyone from controversial figures like Churchill to even fictional characters like Sherlock Holmes. But you would be hard-pressed to find a monument that commemorated the 1 million people killed in the Great Irish Famine, a genocide orchestrated by the British.
The British government conveniently omits England's role in bringing about genocides like the so-called potato famine from school books, like many other regimes that weave history in a way that justifies crimes against humanity.
Here's a real chance for the UK government and the Department for Education to truly celebrate, or rather I should say commemorate, the diverse groups of people that it can encourage our systems and our schools to remember because of who their predecessor governments have exterminated in previous centuries, whether we're talking about the indigenous people of Australia, Malays, Chinese, Indian subcontinent, Iranians, Iraqis.
Genocide Memorial Day is held on the anniversary of Israel's Operation Cast Lead in 2008 to 2009, which killed hundreds of Palestinians. Again in 2021, thousands of Palestinians were killed at the hands of the Israeli regime, which legitimizes its actions by evoking another genocide, the Holocaust. The vicious cycle continues, and therefore, so must the fight against dehumanization and ethnic cleansing. Bianca Rahimi, London.
The Yemeni army and its allied Ansarullah forces have hit the heart of the United Arab Emirates, with officials in Abu Dhabi confirming two fire incidents near storage facilities of an oil firm and the city's international airport. It came just days after the Yemeni army repelled an attack by Emirati-backed mercenaries in the province of Ma'rib, killing and injuring dozens. In a statement, the Yemeni army says Monday's attack inside the UAE was a warning to stop its involvement in the Saudi-led war on the country. Earlier this month, the Yemeni army released footage of a captured UAE-flagged vessel, which had trespassed into the country's territorial waters. Army spokesman Yahya Sadi said the ship was carrying military equipment and was engaged in hostile acts against Yemen. The UAE joined the Saudi-led coalition in 2015 in order to reinstate a friendly regime in Yemen. In April 2018, the Emirates deployed its military to Socotra, an island that overlooks the strategic Bab al-Mandab Strait, a main shipping route connecting the Red Sea to the Gulf of Aden and the Arabian Sea. 2 weeks later, Saudi troops were also deployed there, a move the Yemenis described as a coup against legitimacy. The UAE had largely scaled down its military presence in Yemen in 2019, but continued funding, arming, and training mercenaries in support of separatists in southern Yemen. It became quite clear when forces loyal to former Yemeni government, aided by UAE-backed brigades and Saudi warplanes, reclaimed the oil and gas-rich southern province of Shabwa earlier this month and made advances toward Ma'rib province. However, the Yemeni army's repeated retaliatory drone and missile attacks inside Saudi Arabia and now in the UAE show the coalition is losing the momentum. It has also inflicted heavy losses on Saudi and Emirati-backed militias operating inside the country. Since last year, the Yemeni army, along with Ansarullah forces, have liberated nearly 20,000 square kilometers of land in several large-scale operations. Nearly 7 years of bombing campaigns and blockade on Yemen have proved fruitless for Saudi Arabia and some of its regional and international allies, including the U.S., as they fail to achieve their intended goals. On the other hand, Yemen's armed forces and the popular comedies have grown stronger against the invaders and give them crushing response to their deadly mayhem in the impoverished nation.
For Afghan students, the year 2021 was full of obstacles. The educational system was disrupted and many schools across remained closed, while a ban on girls returning to secondary schools is still in place.
Now the Filimoy School has opened for students in Afghanistan to facilitate learning. This Iranian platform provides Afghan students with free educational courses.
Samira and Fatima are students of secondary school. After being banned from attending their classes, they decided to join online courses.
Hello everyone, how are you?
Now they are students of Filimoy School and they are happy with everything it has provided.
It has been almost 152 days that we have been away from school. We felt very desperate. In order to stay involved with education, my friends and I gather here and benefit from Filimoy School's online courses. The lessons and videos provided by Filimoy are very interesting and creative.
Teachers and educational consultants believe that online courses are a good means of learning, especially at a time of crisis and pandemic. Mahdi Ishaqi, who is an education consultant, has found Filimoy Online School very professional and useful for Afghan students.
I found the Fillmore School extraordinarily useful, especially for Afghan students who are affected by a political crisis and the coronavirus pandemic. This is very valuable academically too. I'm sure our students highly welcome Fillmore School because they are in need of such opportunities.
Fillmore School says it has provided the service to Afghan students because of their difficult educational conditions. So now every Afghan boy and girl from preschool to the 9th grade can access the same lessons as Iranians do. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Bedouin Palestinians have been living in the Nakab Desert for decades, even before the creation of Israel. It's home to tens of thousands of residents who view these lands as privately owned. Still, Israel has refused to recognize these Palestinian inhabitants and is now claiming that the lands have been registered and belong to the Israeli regime. The latest incursion into Bedouin territories gave rise to a fresh round of escalation, with angry Palestinians turning out, saying the Israeli forestation project is not but an excuse to force them out of their land.
The goal of the tree planting is to prevent the expansion of the Bedouin villages, to prevent a future recognition in our villages, and this action is somewhat political. The extreme right wing used it to spoil the relationship between Jews and Arabs in this place. We say to them, this is our land, these are our villages, we've been here for hundreds and thousands of years, and we will simply not move from this place.
The crackdown turned violent in no time, with Israeli forces targeting the Palestinian demonstrators with all they had, from rubber-coated bullets and tear gas to stun grenades and skunk water. Palestinian families have been living in constant fear and apprehension due to Israel's forced displacements. A controversial case has been the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood. Israel has for some time been seeking the expulsion of several Palestinian families from their houses in Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood of East Al-Quds, in what pro-Palestine groups have been seeing as the continuation of Israel's attempts at ethnic cleansing and Judaization of Palestinian territories. And the regime's demolition of Palestinian residences and businesses has turned into an almost daily occurrence. Palestinians say settlements built on occupied territory will get in the way of them building their future state. They have demanded that Israel freeze all settlement activity if it wants the peace process to resume. But Israel is pushing ahead, taking no heed of those demands. Some experts believe Israel has been planning from the start to expand and perpetuate its occupation, and the two-state solution was never an option for the Tel Aviv to begin with.
There was never a plan for a future Palestinian state. A two-state solution, so-called, is not a solution. It's a delusion. And it's an illusion that was instituted by Ben-Gurion in the 1920s.
All these developments take place as the international community plays the role of a silent witness of the Israeli colonial policies. And all these Palestinian pleas for help and justice are falling on deaf ears. That has many wondering what can be done to make the world quit its role as a silent observer of the injustice that's been committed against Palestinians.
On Friday, EU foreign affairs and defense ministers concluded 2 days of talks, which were dominated by the subject of Russia. They assert Moscow is preparing to invade Ukraine.
Any further military aggression against Ukraine will have massive consequences and severe cost in response. And this includes restrictive measures that will be adopted in coordination with our partners.
Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow's patience with the West has expired. The Kremlin demands an end to NATO's military buildup close to its borders, and any idea of Ukraine joining the alliance to be ruled out. We have been asking EU citizens to give their views on the crisis.
There will always be tensions, as long as people have different views and are standing in their views.
Just communication and dialogue, that always helps.
I mean, Russia has got an enormous nuclear arsenal. We don't. Well, Europe doesn't.
So we have to, you know, tread carefully.
I think we don't need any more conflict, no?
They should just find a middle way to live with each other and don't start a war.
We don't need any war. Of course not. We want peace, all of us.
The EU has donated more than 12 billion euro to the Ukrainian government since 2014. A European Court of Auditors report published last September showed how corruption in the country is rife at the highest levels. During their talks, EU foreign affairs ministers also discussed ongoing efforts to try and get the Iran nuclear deal back on track. France's Jean-Yves Le Drian told journalists after the meeting that negotiations in Vienna are moving much too slowly and a decision must be reached.
But back to Russia, and the ministers claim they want more constructive dialogue with Moscow. But impartial analysts are asking, how can they be serious amid relentless anti-Russia rhetoric and the ongoing implementation of sanctions? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
On Saturday, Rome, Milan and Naples, Italy's largest cities, saw protesters railing against the vaccine passports that are now required to access much of public life. The largest demonstration was held in the Italian capital, Rome, where over 5,000 people gathered in iconic St. John's Square to express their anger at the Mario Draghi government's latest COVID restrictions. The new law has expanded the scope of the National Health Pass, which now can only be obtained through vaccination or recovery from the infection. Italy's public transport, restaurants, hotels, museums, gyms and leisure places are required to check the pass before providing their services to the citizens.
We are not against the vaccine. My daughters and I have been vaccinated. Furthermore, we don't hold it against the Italian fellow citizens who got vaccinated. It was their choice and we respect it. We are sick and tired of being considered just numbers for statistics. We are human beings, citizens, with our rights and freedoms.
The organizers of the protest say they are not supporting the no-vax movement, but are very concerned over the socio-economic consequences of the restrictions. Thousands of small and medium-sized companies that make up the bulk of the Italian economy have been forced to shut down due to the coronavirus lockdowns.
Retailers, shopkeepers, everybody knows full well that the new restrictions will hit them even harder. Scientific experts have explained that the vaccine offers partial protection against transmission or of infection from the virus. This green pass is just a way to control us.
Despite Italy recording over 180,000 COVID-related cases on Saturday, the daily number of reported coronavirus infections in Italy has begun to fall in recent days. However, scientific experts say the Omicron wave has not peaked just yet.
On top of the pandemic's socioeconomic effects, Italy is bracing for the upcoming presidential election. Lawmakers will elect the country's next president on January 24, with current Prime Minister Mario Draghi among the contenders. The possibility of a government crisis cannot be ruled out. Max Civili, Rome.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, childbearing. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of childbearing in the Islamic lifestyle. There is a lot of emphasis on having more children in the Islamic texts and in the Islamic teachings, whereas the Prophet has said that you need to bring more kids or we need to have more children. And if you want to choose someone as a spouse, one of the criterias should be that whether they will be able to bring kids or not, or children or not. And that is one of the conditions. They said when you want to marry, like a girl to a boy or boy to a girl, they should see that whether they can bring kids or not. And that's why Imam has said, we have a narration from Imam Baqir alayhi salam as well, that when you marry to someone who can bring kids, and do not go after the beauty only, and the beauty who denies to have kids. Why? Because they're not expanding the human generation. They're not being the cause of the expansion of the human generations. And this is what Imam is saying, that you need to be careful when you need to marry. So in Islam, there is a lot of emphasis on marrying. Obviously, you cannot have kids according to the Islamic teachings legally if you're not marrying. Therefore, there is a lot of emphasis on the marriage and after marriage on having kids. And it is also said that do not think that you should not have kids because of your financial issues, because financial issues has nothing to do with the kids, because Allah has given the promise of sustenance, or providing the sustenance. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of childbearing, and we said that many people, they don't bring children or they don't bring kids because they think that they cannot provide their sustenance. They are maybe through like the means that they have, for example, like financially, they cannot support. Some people think they cannot train their kids, and that is one of the reasons of not bringing children. Or maybe they think like they need to enjoy their life for some time, and after that they think about the formation of the family, whereas all these things are not right. The enjoyment in the life is with the kids. The family formation is the bound through which you will have more sustenance, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has promised to give us the sustenance. So even it is also said that when you have a kid, when we have a kid, when a child is born, Allah increases the person's sustenance because He has promised. Yes, we need to struggle, and on top of that, Allah will give us the sustenance. He will provide us. And because He has promised us for this sustenance, therefore, we should not be worried about it. We only should worry about the amount of work that we are doing or the struggle that we are doing. Therefore, Islam emphasizes, and according to the Islamic lifestyle, having more kids means having a better life and the happiest life. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight. Most Americans believe that most politicians are corrupt. How depressing. Not to mention how terrible for the health of democracy. The article you're about to hear has been published in the opinion section of the New York Times. It has been written by Michelle Cottle, a member of the paper's editorial board. The piece is titled, Congress Can Trade Stocks or Keep the Public Trust. Not both. Most Americans believe that most politicians are corrupt. How depressing. Not to mention how terrible for the health of democracy. After all, if the system is broken and everyone is a crook anyway, why not elect a reality TV grifter with a smashed ethical compass to be president? Sensitive to this problem, Congress typically responds to scandals within its ranks with fits of reform fever. This is what we are now seeing with bills, so many bills, aimed at restricting lawmakers from trading stock while in office. The issue of how to prevent members of Congress from improperly profiting from their positions has long been a tricky one. Lawmakers have access to information unavailable to the general public and the power to shape policy in a direction that could prove personally lucrative. In 2012, Congress passed the Stock Act, which prohibits members of Congress from making trades based on their privileged information. Progressives, such as Senator Elizabeth Warren, have been arguing for years that much more needs to be done. The issue grabbed renewed attention in the past 2 years after questions arose about whether certain lawmakers made stock trades based on their privileged knowledge about the COVID pandemic. Senator Richard Burr, a North Carolina Republican, has earned himself extra close attention from the Securities and Exchange Commission, SEC, for dumping a bunch of stocks in the hospitality industry in February of 2020. Last month, an investigation by Insider revealed that dozens of members of Congress had violated the reporting requirements on trading. The report also found that Congress tends to be lax about punishing violators and about making information on this matter public. Policing its own has never been the institution's strong suit. Just like that, congressional stock trading became a hot topic again. Lawmakers from both parties are rushing to offer up their solutions, some more stringent than others. Punch Bowl News did a roundup last week of early contenders, with more expected. Senator Jeff Merkley of Oregon and Representative Raja Krishnamurti of Illinois, both Democrats, are championing a bill that would bar lawmakers and senior staff members from trading individual stocks and require that they place all stocks in a blind trust. Senator Josh Hawley, a Missouri Republican, would require lawmakers and their spouses to use a blind trust and compel lawmakers to return any stock profits to the Treasury Department. Democratic Senators John Ossoff of Georgia and Mark Kelly of Arizona would extend the trust requirement even further to include lawmakers' dependent children, as would a bill by Representative Abigail Spanberger, a Virginia Democrat. Details aside, it is hard to say whether this issue will receive serious consideration in either chamber. The Democratic majority already has a lot on its plate. It's an election year. Partisan posturing will be in full bloom. And currently, and rather awkwardly, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi opposes major reform. The Speaker believes that sunlight is the best disinfectant, explained Drew Hamill, her Deputy Chief of Staff, noting that she has asked Representative Zoe Lofgren, who chairs the Committee on House Administration, to examine members' unacceptable non-compliance with the reporting requirements and consider the possibility of stiffening penalties. But on the matter of whether to restrict trading by lawmakers, the Speaker Nancy Pelosi is decidedly not on board. Asked about the issue last month, she snapped down the idea. "We are a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that." This is indeed a free market economy. It is also one that a growing number of Americans feel is not working for them. Combine that with the public's aforementioned grim view of politicians, and you can see where Nancy Pelosi's remarks might be considered a wee bit out of touch. House Democrats would do well to work on changing their chief's mind, not just because it is the right thing to do, but also because the party risks being outflanked by Republicans on the issue. Make no mistake, GOP leaders know a political opening when they see one. Last week, the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy said he would consider limiting or banning stock trading by members if his party wins control of the House of Representatives in November. See what he did there? You can bet this issue will pop up again and again as the midterm elections heat up. Democrats need to put themselves in a position to own that debate. Even lawmakers who hew to the straight and narrow understand that America is facing a crisis of faith in its political system and in its elected leaders. Lawmakers can obsess about making money once they leave office. Until then, they need to stay focused on the public interest, which includes taking steps to reassure the public that they aren't all a bunch of corrupt, self-serving, money-grubbing, power-hungry crooks.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us. The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih Al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah Al-Uzma Al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Another very important issue that we deal with is deviancy. people who introduce wrong ideologies, people who introduce wrong and bad and haram habits, individuals who might somehow want to infiltrate into the ranks of the believers and introduce something that would not only bring about misconceptions but destabilize a person's faith. These kind of individuals, they need to be dealt with, and dealt with swiftly. Ahlul bid'ah, as they say. Now, we're not talking about bid'ah in the sense of innovation, because that's another topic altogether. Related to this, of course, but bid'ah, what is bid'ah? What's the Sunni understanding of bid'ah? What's the Salafi understanding of bid'ah? What's the Shi'i understanding of bid'ah? That's another topic. Here we're talking about Ahlul bid'ah in the sense of someone, you know, wanting to bring about some kind of innovative idea in the negative sense. Idea as far as in the meaning of ideology, of course. فَوَيْلٌ, the Quran says, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, فَوَيْلٌ لِلَّذِينَ يَكْتُبُونَ الْكِتَابَ بِأَيْدِيهِمْ. Woe be upon those who write the book with their own hands. ثُمَّ يَقُولُونَ هَذَا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ. And then they say this, they attribute it to God. So they say something, and they say, well, you know, this is what religion is, this is my understanding of religion, and this is what God wants from us, for example. It's their understanding, it's their personal opinionated view. In most cases, when it comes to something like this, it is baseless. وَيَشْتَرُوا بِهِ ثَمَنًا قَلِيلًا. For them, in order for them to gain some kind of financial gain, لِيَشْتَرُوا بِهِ ثَمَنًا قَلِيلًا. They're going to get some money out of it. They're going to get some fame out of it, whatever it is. فَوَيْلٌ لَهُمْ مِمَّا كَتَبَتْ أَيْدِيهُمْ وَوَيْلٌ لَهُمْ مِمَّا يَكْسُبُونَ. Surah Al-Baqarah, verse number 70. Nine. And there are a few other verses that also speak about that.
Ayatollah Javadi Omri, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ فساد داره فرون روزون است.
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش هم داره و اینه که فرون درختکاری رو کم ثواب داره, دعا هم داره, ثواب هم داره.
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
Imam اونطوری که رو گفته دارم گفته دی اون امامش گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره, همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره.
Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree.
محیط زیست نگه سالم نگه داری این دو ثواب داره.
There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment.
وقتی میخوای کشاورزی کنی یه قدری گندم بگیر رو به قبله بیست این دعا رو بخون. اینا همه امام گفته دیگه.
When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned.
تو نظام اسلامی این جلد دوم جاش خالی.
We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
When you see the case of Ahlul Bid'ah, Ahlul Reed, dubious individuals, deviant individuals, people who want to go against the mainstream kind of ideology, who you don't even know who, what their origin is, where they came from, what their understanding is, and all of a sudden they want to enter into the Muslim Ummah, they want to enter into your community, and they want to wreak havoc. In this case, it's very important for a person to be vigilant, to be aware, to be cautious, to remember that sweet talkers are always going to captivate some people, but you need to be smarter than that. You need to be more aware. Imam Sadiq alayhi salam says you need to stay away from such individuals. Don't befriend with Ahlul Bid'ah. وَلَا تُجَالِسُوهُمْ. Don't even sit with these people. You know, some people say, well, we just want to hear what's going on. We just want to hear what he or she has to say. No, don't even sit with them. فَتَصِيرُ عِنْدَ النَّاسِ كَوَاحِدٍ مِّنْهُمْ In the view, in the eyes of all other people, you're going to be one of their supporters. You're going to be one of their followers. قَالَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَالِهِ Then Imam Sadiq says that the Holy Prophet said, الْمَرْءُ عَلَى دِينِ خَلِيلِهِ وَقَرِينِهِ That a person is evaluated, is seen as someone who is a follower of the religion of those who they associate with, their friend, their associate, their companion. الْمَرْءُ عَلَى دِينِ خَلِيلِهِ وَقَرِينِهِ And that's why when it does come to someone coming up with a load of mumbo jumbo, someone who, you know, all of a sudden has some kind of weird way of looking at things as far as religion and issues like that is concerned, then Ahlul Ilm need to come out and stand against them.
I invite you to listen to the continuation of the program on IRIB English Radio.
Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he says, إِذَا ظَهَرَتِ الْبِدَعُ When deviant ideology comes out, when innovative, wrong, false information comes out, as far as belief, issues of religion and belief is concerned, إِذَا ظَهَرَتِ الْبِدَعُ فِي أُمَّتِي In my ummah, فَلْيُظْهِرِ الْعَالِمُ عِلْمَهُ Then the alim, the scholar, needs to come out and show his knowledge, and show his knowledge. فَمَنْ لَمْ يَفْعَلْ And whoever, if you don't do that, فَعَلَيْهِ لَعْنَةُ اللَّهِ Then the curse of Allah be upon such a person. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he then says, فَضْلُ الْعَالِمِ عَلَى الْعَابِدِ سَبْعُونَ دَرَجَةً The merit or the virtue of an alim over a abid, over a worshipper, is by 70 levels. And in each level, there is a span of up to 70 years, etc., etc. Dhalika, the reason why Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi is saying that the alim is always going to be better than the abid is Because as shaytan yada'u al-bid'a lil-nas, fayubsiruha al-alim, fayaziluha. Shaytan places a heretic view, a deviant view, a heretic idea, a deviant idea among people, fayubsiruha al-alim, and the alim picks up on it. Alim says, well, be careful guys, this is dangerous. This guy, he's feeding you poison in honey. والحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
Driving past, walking fast To the field of truth Hear the children scream
The Words, the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran IRIB English Radio
Every corner represents A different image in my mind A momentary motion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.